Hey, this is the Football Diary Podcast. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. In a weekend where the top six all weirdly played each other. And in the middle of that, we've got Newcastle playing Fulham, a Manchester derby between City and United at Old Trafford, and a North London derby as well to boot. So we're going to start in Manchester, I think, obviously. I think that's the best place for me and Dave to start. But I'm going to zoom in on you, Miles, first, because it's the closest Manchester derby we've seen in quite a few years, isn't it? And United pipped them 2-1, coming back from 1-0 down, but wasn't without its controversy, was it? Talk us through that opening equaliser, rather, for United.
Yeah, it's one that we'll go back and forth over, I think, unless you'll be modest and humble enough to go, yeah, that definitely shouldn't have stood. It's an error in the rules, isn't it? I've seen so much discussion over it. Essentially, the rule is if you are interfering in play, you are offside. That's the general bracket of the rule. And then I saw today it being discussed that there then comes these caveats or these things that you measure that against. Have they touched the ball? Well, Rashford doesn't do that. Are they affecting other players? Yes. So it becomes a decision for the referee to make. How much do you think they've interfered in play? The linesman clearly felt that Rashford had. The referee, I think it's Stuart Atwell, clearly thought he didn't. So that's what you have to go with, I guess. And that, to me, is just it's the real epitome of what the problem with things like VAR are, where VAR has been introduced, but with offsides, it'll only get involved if it is concrete and the law. So obviously, if Rashford touches the ball, that becomes the law of offside and you can measure whether he's offside. But actually, this was a subjective offside decision, which shouldn't really exist. So it's so complicated. United won't care at all. And if anything, it kind of makes the victory even sweeter for them that they've kind of got one over on City as well. But there's no dispute that he was involved in play, surely. All you need to do is look at Edison and the way he shapes up. He follows Rashford's run. Rashford runs in front of Akanji to get to the ball. If you look, even Bruno Fernandes hesitates when he gets to the ball at first because it still looks like Rashford's going to take it. And then eventually goes through with it with his second swing. And it's a brilliant finish, don't get me wrong, but it's a dodgy one, isn't it?
I think if that was against us, I'd feel really aggrieved because common sense dictates that Rashford's interfering with play because the focus is on him. Whereas if he wasn't even there, the keeper would probably come out and clear it, you know, or someone would run towards the ball faster. He's a clear obstacle, isn't he? Yeah, that's it. But not taking any away from United, they came back brilliantly. It was a fairly close first half, wasn't it, Dave? And the Grealish goal in the second half when he came on, you didn't know which way it was going to go at that point. But United dug in and fought back. And yes, the goal was controversial. I'll get your take on that as well. But do you think United were good for the win?
I think in terms of, if you look at on balance of chances for each team, I think United, I can't actually remember any of the chances for City in the first half or the second half. And, you know, United arguably should have been going into half-time, arguably one goal up or two even. Rashford obviously had two really good chances, which, looking back, he probably should have at least scored one. So, on the basis of play, you have to say that United have got a great case for deserving to win the game. And I was actually just really proud of how they played. I think the main thing for me was actually the way they came back from going behind. You look at the United teams of past, especially the last few years, probably would have just wilted and fallen apart. And I'm just really happy with the character that they showed. And I think United, I've not seen Old Trafford like that. For that sort of atmosphere was unbelievable to hear and to see. It's obviously a great day and you can't say obviously United have enjoyed too many good derby days of late, but this was certainly one of them. So
the last one was an absolute car crash of a performance, wasn't it? And I think that's a measure of the progress of Erik ten Hag and his team, because they're playing like a team now. And I think every pundit has said the same. This team looks balanced, looks cohesive. They fight for one another. And Erik ten Hag's comments were that United's fans were so disconnected at the start of the season from the team. And now look at the difference it's made by actual desire on the pitch to win. And even when we haven't played that well, we've still fought really hard and dug really deep. And this was an example of it actually working out for us. And the reaction of the players after the goal as well, especially the winning goal from Rashford, was superb, wasn't it? Like running into the crowd and celebrating. Casemiro and Varane looked absolutely thrilled to be part of it. And yeah, this is the best I've seen United in terms of momentum for so long. And as somebody who's always looked at City and gone, we're miles away from them. The gap feels really close now, and it's literally 1 point, Miles. Do you think this is now, I hate saying this, but do you think this is now a title race that includes United?
No, but I don't really think it includes City either at the moment. I think if it's any other team that are topped by 8 points, we hand them the league at this point. So I'm not sure how much of a race we've got. If it stays like this for a bit longer, or United beat Arsenal when they play each other quite soon, then yeah, we'll talk about that as a bit more of a conversation. But I don't want to dampen how brilliant United have been lately. There's a lot of things to really rave about. Dave's completely right. The response to that goal is amazing. We saw what happened when United went behind in the last derby. This season, let's not forget, the squad's not really changed since that game, but it's a completely different outfit all of a sudden. The midfield is so well balanced. It's really desirable in terms of Premier League midfields. The way Casemiro is able to break up the play. But also, I was saying to Dave before we start recording, you don't recognise how good his delivery is and what a great ball-playing midfielder Casemiro actually is. Because we've already always known him to be the guy who kind of breaks up the play and does the dirty stuff. But actually, you can see his passing range is outstanding. Eriksen as well, in this deeper role as he gets slightly older and not being the number 10 and kind of letting Bruno venture forward and just playing that decisive pass, that's so important. And United look really well-rounded, and that's how they won this game. They just seem prepared in all of their positions. They seem well-coached, and that's something United have needed for a really long time. And it's making certain players really shine. Rashford's now got nine home games in a row he scored in. That's an amazing record. And this success will see United build confidence and get back to where they feel they should be. And one more thing for both of you, if we're looking at the improvement of Man United. Dave, I'm mainly looking at you. Viva Garnacho. He's got to get a shout out, right? He was brilliant when he came on again.
Yeah, I think Garnacho. I've not seen him actually have a bad game this season. Every time he's come on, he's not always started games. He's made an impact. You'll know more than anyone, Miles, in against Villa in the League Cup. He was literally ridiculous how good he was. One thing I would mention, though, as well, I'd just like to say how good Ten Hag has been. He's even surpassed my expectations, just how good he's been. He's got this reputation of having, you know, a possession-based sort of coaching style. But what we have seen from him is he's kind of acknowledged that he's probably not got all the players that he needs to kind of obviously present that kind of style of play. And I don't want to mention other coaches in the league at the moment, but there's are certain coaches who are, you know, carrying on trying to play the same old style that's carried them so much success over the last few years and it not working out. He's actually found a way to win. And he's came with this reputation of being so meticulous with his preparation. And it actually takes me a little bit back to Mourinho's days in his prime, how detailed he was in his, in, you know, setting up game plans, finding a way to win. And that's sort of what Ten Hag has managed to do this season, especially in the big games. You look at the teams that he's already beaten, Spurs, Liverpool. The only team, I think, the big team we've not beaten is Chelsea. And we were quite good in that game as well. But you just have to say, like, he's done so well. And we're riding a wave at the minute, riding a wave of momentum and just trying to see where it can take us. I think fans are sort of daring to believe and dream again. And that's also a bit of a scary thing as well, because you don't want to get upset. But it's a different, you know, completely different atmosphere around United at the minute.
What is the expectation for this season now? Because there's some difficult fixtures ahead. Let's not forget the Europa League. You've still got Barcelona to overcome. They won a trophy yesterday. You're probably favourites for the League Cup. I don't think you can say you're competing for the title, but you're right. With the way Ten Hag's turning this round, I think he's the quickest manager in Man United history to 20 wins. Like, that's an impressive record with this squad and the issues that he's had to deal with in the meantime around a certain Cristiano Ronaldo in particular. Like, what do you guys expect this season?
I think the aim was always top four anyway, and I think that's still the same. Maybe even top three if you want to be more ambitious, because I think fourth and below the quality seems to have dipped quite a lot, doesn't it? In fact, even top four looks more out of reach than ever for teams like Tottenham, which we'll talk about later. But I think, yeah, top four and just a good showing of improvement in all competitions. And I think we've already ticked that box, you know, providing we don't capitulate. I don't know how you feel, Dave, but the difference in the way we play and the progressiveness is so stark. And you talked about coaching. I think the example of that is Aaron Wan-Bissaka coming back into the team and actually playing okay.
He looks great.
You know, that's remarkable. You know, Luke Shaw moving position and still looking comfortable. That's coaching. So I don't know what you think, Dave. What are your expectations now? Are you aiming any higher than top four?
I think the start of the season, we were aiming to get obviously back into the Champions League. I don't think that, you know, that expectation has kind of changed at all. With how well we're doing at the minute, I think anything else would be a bonus. And I think you always want to win a trophy, especially how long we've been out without. Obviously, 2017 was the last year that we won a couple of trophies. So if we could win a cup and get into the Champions League, I'd be more than happy with that. And just because of the level of sort of progression that we've shown so far, unless it takes a massive downturn, which is you'd imagine it'd be unlikely, especially with the sort of character and mentality that is created within that squad, it seems. Let's be honest, there's been a couple of bad results this season. You know, we've mentioned obviously the Man City game, Brentford at the start, Brighton, the Villa game as well. So I have no doubts that there will be a couple more games at least where we're just, because I just don't think we have the squad to carry it through. I think we are lacking a couple of bodies, a bit of depth in there. Not just bodies, but quality, you know, strength in depth,
yeah,
is the main thing for me. So, yeah, I'm really happy with how it's going at the minute, and there's no complaints at the minute for me.
Well, the signing of Wout Weghorst on loan has bolstered the attack somewhat, hasn't it? And Anthony Martial was probably the only kind of weak link in the team, and he got hooked, didn't he, quite early on. So hopefully a target number nine makes a difference for United. But next up is Arsenal in the league, isn't it? So setting up nicely this top of the table surge that we've had. And I mean, Man City will feel the same. They're still a point ahead of us, let's not forget. So they'll still feel like if they can get results against Arsenal, things could change. But who knows? And on the subject of Arsenal, they actually won at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. They won away at Spurs for the first time in a while. But it looked so comprehensive, Miles, didn't it? I mean, a 2-0 victory should have been a lot more. Spurs had a few chances, but Arsenal were absolutely dominant, weren't they? I've never seen that much swagger from Arsenal. And that's saying a lot, because this season they've cruised to victory quite a lot. But in this game, they were in cruise control all through, weren't they?
Yeah, they were outstanding, and it's going to be such a relief to them, because that's a double over Tottenham in this season, done. They don't have to stress about Spurs spoiling the party at any point. Last season, obviously, their goal for the season kind of came unstuck against Spurs, and now actually what they've done is embarrassed Tottenham. I think that's the only way to put it. Spurs, you're right, had their chances, but Arsenal just seemed to cope with all of that. Ramsdale, it was the best I've seen him play this season, because it's the best he's needed to play this season, let's be totally honest. There's still little things that Arsenal will want to iron out. They won't want to give teams as many chances as Spurs had. But going forward, yeah, they cut through Spurs with absolute ease, and they seem so calm doing it. Odegaard's quality on the ball and Martinelli's little flicks and Saka's runs, it was so nice to watch. And I worried a little bit for Arsenal that come the end of the season, because their squad's quite small, that fatigue might settle in, because they were having to really take urgency into games. They didn't even really seem that urgent at times in this game. They just seemed, like you said, in control. It just seemed really comfortable for them, and it could have been much, much worse for Spurs, to be honest.
What an awful start, though, as well. Hugo Lloris would be, I don't know what he's thinking. He's retired from international football. I feel like he should retire from football altogether after that calamity. It was horrendous.
He's got that in him, hasn't he? Let's be honest. Lloris does that really often. He's not a top-level goalkeeper.
Why couldn't he do that against Spurs. England?
Yeah, it was the best performance he's had in the last 5 years. No, if Spurs do have ambitions of getting into the Champions League and competing at the top end of the table, there's a lot of areas in their squad that they need to replace. Lloris has to be one of them at this point, because he's capable of a great game. He's a good shot stopper at times, but that, it wasn't his only Rick either. There was one in the first half just before the goal, to be honest, where he nearly gave the ball away as well. And you just think he looked asleep, to be totally honest. And when you compare that to Ramsdale at the other end, It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy, the gap between these two sides, when actually the gap was almost flipped last season. Not to the degree that it is now, of course, but Spurs beat Arsenal to the top four last season, let's not forget. And now they couldn't look further apart. It's crazy what Conte has done at Spurs, what Arteta's managed to achieve. You never would have expected that Arsenal, they are title favourites now without any shadow of a doubt. They have to be. They're the best team in the league right now. So it's fair play to them, to be fair.
We've said so much about Arsenal this season and the positives that have happened in the last 12 months and the stark contrast between last season and this. And there's certain players that just keep producing, and the consistency of each of those players and of Arteta in keeping faith with them is fantastic. And that's been the key for me, is it's such a settled 11 now. That midfield is one of the best, if not the best midfield threes in the league in terms of consistency and how they read each other. Even Eddie and Nketiah are up front, and it doesn't make any difference to the quality of the attack. So they can't really be caught at 8 points clear, I don't think. Even if a few freak results happen, I think Arsenal are now strolling to the league, Dave, don't you? Surely it's done and dusted. I hate saying that because I want to see competition, but they look so good.
I think the main thing that people it's kind of holding people back from saying Arsenal are going to win the league is they don't have that know-how. They don't have that experience in the team of getting over the line to win a league title. And I think that's why a lot of people are still expecting City to come back and put a string of wins together, you know, go on one of those ridiculous runs like they have and Liverpool have done over the last few years. But this season does feel like an anomaly. It does feel quite strange that we're having quite a few freak results, quite a few teams coming in who haven't really shown a great deal of form over the last few years. The likes of United not look brilliant. Liverpool look absolutely terrible. Spurs, are in a false position. They shouldn't be in fifth. They are just a bad team. So who knows? And like, I think it's completely fair to say Arsenal could comfortably win this league. They've not shown any sort of weakness so far. The only thing I will say is it seems to me in games, they've always started on the front foot. They have such a quick start to most of their games. The first 30 minutes, I'd say, are where teams kind of need to try and ride the storm. And we saw that actually that game against United, which is the only game they've lost this season. They did actually have a really quick start against United, and United managed just to ride that storm. And obviously, it was kind of against the run of play that Antony scored that goal. And I think teams are struggling to kind of combat that barrage that they're actually throwing at them. And Arsenal, just they look so good going forward at the minute. But they also displayed in the second half that, you know, they can win games defending as well. They're, like Miles mentioned, Ramsdale looked so good in goal and actually made a few great saves that probably could have actually brought Tottenham back into the game. So you've got to praise them there as well. Defensively, they've looked really sound, which is not something you could say about Arsenal over the last few years.
The only thing that worries me with Arsenal, and it's not even a worry because it wholly depends on hypotheticals, and you could add this hypothetical to any team in the league and it changes things, but more so than someone like City, how they would cope if you go through January and they don't bring in a midfielder and a winger. If then the January transfer window closes and Saka picks up a season-ending injury, and so does Odegaard or Partey, then I would worry about them. But other than that, they should win the league from this position now. I honestly believe that. It's a difficult one of knowing whether to stick or twist, because Arsenal weren't expecting to win the league at the start of the season. The January window is a really hard one to invest in. So do you want to go and blow nearly 100 million euros on a Ukrainian kid that's only played 20 games in his whole career? Or do you think, let me just keep building what I've currently got here? I think there's business to be done for Arsenal. And that, for me, if they sign Yuri Tielemans, for example, and then find a winger that's of a decent backup quality, then I think the title is theirs. Until they've done that, I would say it's open to a degree. But yeah, they're in a great position now, aren't they? They have shown a bit of defensive fragility at times. I think the fact that Spurs had as many chances as they did, they shouldn't need Ramsdale to be as good as he was. Does Edison ever have to make that many saves, for example? Well, sometimes at City, to be fair, it's probably a bad example. But when Liverpool were at their peak, Alisson barely touched the ball. Now he has to touch it a lot. We see the opposite side. You notice that difference of top teams, that actually the goalkeepers just need to be on high alert for the one or two chances, whereas Ramsdale, I think, probably made six or seven good saves against Spurs. So they've got to be careful of that, maybe.
Yeah. Zooming in on Spurs then quickly, their season is descending really into not what we expected. I mean, we all mentioned Spurs as potential top three or even top two for the league this season because of the difference Antonio Conte could make. Mm. And he's made some good signings, but it's just not coming together, Dave, is it? I mean, I don't know how we're still persisting with the same wing-backs. Sessegnon is just not good enough, I don't think. The midfield looks poor. Højbjerg's not great. There's just so many misplaced passes. Kane and Son have been sticking around hoping something would change. I don't know how long that's going to take for them to stick around anymore. It looks so uncertain at Spurs at the minute, including obviously Conte's future as well. What are their aims for this season? And does Conte see it out with them? Because he looks thoroughly fed up, doesn't he?
They're in a nightmare position, actually. And we say about some of the other teams that are going through on the verge of a potential rebuild, Liverpool, Chelsea. Spurs are probably in the worst position of the lot. The amount of improvement that squad needs, not just that, but the position that they are in terms of, obviously you've got Kane and Son. Son just looks a complete shadow of the player that he was
last season.
You know, 18 months ago, a year ago.
Yeah.
Harry Kane's obviously in a position where he's going to have a year left on his contract soon. And Spurs are still banding about that they think they're going to get 100 million for him, for someone who's got a year left on their deal. I'm sorry, but teams just aren't, you know, that stupid to go and do that these days. They had the opportunity to make the money on Kane. They decided against it. Now they're in this situation where they're probably going to lose their best player for 60, 70 million. And they're going to be in a position where they've basically got to rebuild their whole squad from back to front. The one player they did miss actually in this game, and they were kind of forced to bypass their whole midfield because they just didn't have the midfield to compete with Arsenal, was Bentancur. They were constantly playing diagonals and it was just predictable what they were doing. Diagonals out to the wings, try and get it into Kane's feet, try and create something, but they looked so predictable at times. So it's, you know, dire days really for Tottenham.
It's funny with Spurs, isn't it? Because we talk about how they need to improve the quality of their wing-backs in particular. And actually, over the last few years, they spent money on Reguilon. That didn't work. Emerson Royale, that's not worked. Jed Spence, we'd never see him. Sessegnon is not really good enough. Perisic. So they bought players in these positions. It just shows the lack of strategy and how poor the investment is. It looks like they're going for this Pedro Porro now from Sporting Lisbon. He was on City's books for ages and didn't cut it there. But he's looked good at Sporting. I don't think it would be a bad deal necessarily. But that's 45 million. Again, Conte's got 6 months left on his contract. They don't look like they're going to improve anytime soon. He will leave in the summer and probably go back to Juve, you'd imagine. So I don't really know what Spurs do from here because their season's just over already. And actually, we just talked about a couple of other teams that are on the rise, namely Man United, who have signed a 6 month loan deal for a number nine, holding out for the summer when they can look for a striker, and Harry Kane's entering the last year of his contract looking for a new challenge. That could be disastrous for Spurs, but a perfect opportunity for a club like United to come and snap up one of the world's best strikers because he wants to get away from a madhouse. That's what Spurs is right now. No one looks happy to be there, including the manager, including the fans. The football's boring. You never know what you're going to get from them. They have two different halves of football, more like Jekyll and Hyde than any team I've ever seen in the Premier League normally. And then they can't even get a good second half performance out of them. It's really troubling for Spurs. For me personally, this has been an excellent weekend. I got to watch Spurs lose to Arsenal, which with my allegiances, that's good. United beat City, again, fantastic. Villa beat Leeds and Liverpool lost. It couldn't have been a better weekend, really. But I'm going to quite enjoy this podcast just laughing at Spurs, particularly with someone like Richarlison on the books. Like, we have to acknowledge that. The way he behaved was disgusting. Yeah.
That's a strange signing for me as well, though. He's not even starting games.
What? We said that. What's at the time. Going on? It didn't make sense because he's never going to. That was, if we lose Kane, Richarlison will come in. And I think that's essentially what he's been brought in for. But that fan kicking Ramsdale is pathetic and embarrassing. He doesn't do that if Richarlison's not acting the way he is, though. I fully believe that. 30 seconds, not even 30 seconds, 15 seconds before that, Richarlison's in Ramsdale's face going at him. So you're encouraging that sort of thing. It was disgusting. I think he's an absolute clown. He's one of those players where you always say, oh, if he's at your club, you'd like him. I'd hate him at Villa. He would do my head in. Yeah.
Oof. Yeah. Maybe cash in on him while his value is still relatively high after the World Cup, you know. They'd probably still get a fair amount for him.
Oh, the other thing that's definitely worth mentioning from this game is the amazing video of the scenes where Arteta is congratulating his players and then catches a glimpse of Granit Xhaka going for someone and he sprints after him and pulls him back. That's absolutely quality. I love that.
Anyway, Spurs on the slide by the looks of it. How far they will go, we don't know. But two teams ready to permanently take their place in the top four or five even are Newcastle and Fulham. Surprisingly, both of them find themselves
Fulham,
in...
Come on.
Well, you don't know. They're playing well. Newcastle obviously playing really well. They've only lost once this season. And they saw off Fulham 1-0 thanks to a goal from Alexander Isak on his return. But again, it was a strange game where Fulham could have took the advantage if Alexander Mitrovic hadn't fluffed his lines, taking his penalty against his former team. What the hell happened there, Miles? That was insane to watch.
So harsh. I feel really bad for him, to be honest. It's one of those where, again, Dave and I were talking about it earlier. Surely he deserves a retake. I know it's his fault and he's the one that's fallen over, but it just doesn't look fair, does it? If you can have a retake for the keeper being up his line or encroachment or something, I just thought, the spot looked a bit dodgy anyway. He's clearly slipped. He's not intentionally trying to deceive Pope by kicking it twice. He's fallen over. Just let him have another go, I thought. I know that's not the rule, but I just felt bad for him.
Yeah, it was hard to watch, wasn't it? And Newcastle took advantage, didn't they? And they just keep on winning and keeping clean sheets as well. So Isak's back in the team. He scored a goal. He linked up really well with Callum Wilson as well. Came on in the second half. And he looks like a potential player if he can stay fit. Again, like Wilson, if they can both stay fit, it's a decent set of strikers they've got, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah, I think the key concern for them now is obviously the fitness of Bruno for them, who obviously went off. You got to give it to Newcastle. They still managed to get obviously the result, the victory over the line. And we just keep wondering when are they going to slip up? When are they going to stop winning? And fair play to them. They just keep churning out the 3 points. And it's frustrating because as a United fan, you want those around you to stop winning as well. But everyone's just doing so well at the minute at the top. And Newcastle just... It'll be interesting to see if they do any more in the transfer window. I think we're kind of waiting for them to make a couple of kind of key signings, and whether they're waiting for the summer to do that is another thing. But yeah, they managed to obviously get the win at the death.
Yeah, it was an impressive performance once again from Newcastle. Do you think this is something, Miles, that could probably force Gareth Southgate to rethink who his number one is now after the performances of Ramsdale and Nick Pope so far this season? They've both done really well, haven't they?
Yeah, but to be fair, as bad as Everton are, even Pickford made some really good saves against Southampton. So who knows? It's a nice position to be in where actually all three of them are performing pretty decent. If Pickford can get a move to Spurs in the summer or something, that would be perfect, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. So, that's the top six all wrapped up. If you wanted to see our take on the rest of the Premier League action, notably those managers and teams in danger so far this season at the halfway point, there is another podcast just for that if you click the link that's on screen at the moment. But until then, thanks for your time again, guys. Speak to you soon.